This podcast on WSIU.org is a member-supported service of WSIU Public Radio. Your contributions help provide WSIU's online programming. Call 800-745-9748 or give online at WSIU.org. And thanks.
Governor Pat Quinn pushed Illinois lawmakers this year to make massive cuts and revisions to the state's Medicaid program, and their proposal to do just that is now sitting on his desk. But how those changes will affect the services for people in need is still, in some cases, unknown. I talked with Southern Illinois Healthcare CEO Rex Budde about what he expects over the next several weeks and months.
Speaking about Medicaid is a little bit tricky because we still don't know exactly what the governor's going to do in terms the legislation that was passed. But based on what came out of the General Assembly and went to the governor, what can you tell us about how SIH will be affected?
The Medicaid changes from a reimbursement standpoint are going to cost SIH somewhere between $750,000 to $1 million in reimbursement per year based on what's been passed.
This plan, as I understand it, was, I don't want to say endorsed, but the hospital association said, as far as things go, we can deal with this. Is that something that you kind of agreed with?
Hospital association did make that statement. You know, the conversations I had with our local state senators, congressmen, and representatives, was to get some sense for where they thought this was going to head. Because this really was making, I guess, a good deal out of a bad situation. I'm not happy about this at all, and express that to the local congressman, because the hospitals themselves haven't had a raise in the Medicaid rate since 1995, and now we're actually getting a cut. It never feels good when the concept of a compromise coming out of Springfield is you just don't get hit as hard as you thought you were going to get hit. But I honestly think the Hospital Association felt that they didn't have much of a choice, that something had to be done. And this was that compromise. I don't think anybody is happy about it. The conversation I had with the local representatives and state senators were, let me understand if you think there's another path here. My great fear is the solutions to any of these problems, Medicaid, Medicare, are going to be in the short term just cut, because people don't want to do the creative kinds of things maybe that needs to get done to change how care is rendered or to increase the concept of personal responsibility, those types of things. So, unfortunately, I think we are going to have to deal with just, the rate cuts, as at least in the short term.
As the dust was settling out, that kind of concept kind of made a little bit of news where emergency departments, which by law are not allowed to turn anyone away based on ability to pay, are a part of this Medicaid plan. It's saying, listen, you can't turn them away. You have to provide adequate care to someone no matter what. Is there a way to put something in place, and forgive me for not understanding the industry as well as I should, but if someone could come in and say, well, this is my problem, can the emergency department say, you might be better off going to a clinic, or you might be better off going this way or that way, in an attempt to reduce cost and kind of even out that backlog?
Yeah, that's a really good question, because part of the problem is you've had generations of folks who've kind of been enculturated in to go to the ED to get their care. And a significant amount of the care that gets rendered because of that is not emergent in nature. It may be urgent. And, if you're the person that's got the earache or what have you, that's no fun, or if it's your child. We are actually having conversations on, could we start an urgent clinic? And there's rules around it's got to be in the same address and things like that. If there was more flexibility to move the patient to a better setting, that would obviously improve things. Emergency rooms get clogged up with those types of patients, and then when a true emergency comes in, it really makes it difficult, to treat all the patients. The ultimate solution is getting folks hooked up with a physician, a primary care provider, and I guess teaching that this is where you go for those types of levels of care. And that's, again, gets into that personal responsibility. You've got to create access. And if we can get programs in place that encourage that kind of behavior, and the state's working on some of those types of things, the patient-centered medical home and what have you, and we can get people to go to a primary source of medicine and start to manage some of the issues they've got to deal with, in the long run, costs will go down, and people will get better care and lead healthier lives.
At the same time, you talk to some people who are on Medicaid, and they say, I can't find a physician who will take me because I'm on Medicaid or Medicare, for that matter.
And certainly the situation, particularly for Medicaid, doesn't get any better when providers are going to get paid less, or not paid at all, quite frankly. We haven't been paid for our Medicaid almost a year. And now the state has a program through these changes, once everything gets signed, that after the new fiscal year starts, we're going to start getting some money over the next 6 months to bring that down. But that's part of the problem, too. You know, what a lot of people don't realize is the physician out there is also a business person. They're running a small business as well as, you know, providing for medicine and medical care. And when they don't get their payments, then they don't see the worth in it. I think most physicians will treat Medicaid patients. They don't want to become a dumping ground. They don't want to create a situation where they treat a disproportionate share of patients. But they'll do their fair share. But they just want to be compensated. Even though it's not that good a compensation, they want to be paid in a timely fashion. And that just hasn't been happening in the last year in the state.
Let's get back to the actual Medicaid legislation that was passed. You said it's going to affect you to the tune of $750,000.
Thereabouts, yes.
Okay. What will patients, what will residents around the region see as a result of a cut that large?
Well, you know, the first thing that was always a concern is the staff worries about, are there going to be layoffs because of something like that? And it's our goal not to lay anybody off because of a move like that. We're trying to run our organization such that we make changes constantly over time when positions are open and right-size the organization and make that a focus, so we don't have to be one of those places that suddenly wakes up some one day and says, boy, we need to get rid of, you know, X percent of our workforce. From a care perspective, there are differences where we get reimbursed differently based on the setting. And one of the things, and I told all our local representatives this, is we're going to look very hard at where we do certain services. We may ask a patient that needs a lab test or an X-ray to go to a different site than, you know, one of the particular hospitals, because we can get a little bit better reimbursement in that site. Everybody doesn't get reimbursed exactly the same across the system, and I don't know if most people understand that. So one of the most likely scenarios is we'll move some patients around a little bit. We'll be mindful of the fact that people may not have transportation and those types of things and be sensitive to that issue. But we also have a responsibility to the organization and to the employees of the organization, and quite frankly to others in the region who use our services, to be frugal with those resources and use them appropriately.
Can we put things in perspective a little bit? When you talk about, you know, the Medicaid plan was a $2.7 billion hole in the next fiscal year's budget, it's $750,000 that SIH is going to lose. Is there a percentage of your overall budget that you would?
It depends on the product line, but our overall budget is somewhere in the 10, 11, 12% range on Medicaid book of business that we provide. The OB program with 2,000 births a year, and the majority of those are Medicaid births. You know, that's obviously a big book of the business. And then the stuff that comes through the emergency department is significant.
In your dealing with lawmakers in Springfield and the lobbyists that you no doubt had to negotiate while you were there as well, did they seem to understand the difference between an urban hospital or even a suburban hospital and a rural hospital and healthcare organization like yours?
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, because they divided up the responsibilities when you get into the Charity Care Act, the tax exempt, you know, process. They distinguish between the urban and the rural facilities, and so I think they are developing a better sense for that. Now, you know, they always make an exception for Cook County. And Cook County was exempted from these Medicaid changes, which that came after the fact in terms of a level of knowledge. So that's kind of irritating. But overall, I do think they're starting to really get that and appreciate the differences.
You mentioned the Charity Care Act, and that's something that we've been kind of keeping an eye on for several years. The Attorney General's office basically said that you have to provide a certain amount of charity care in order to get your tax-exempt status. We saw some hospitals in the Champaign-Urbana area that lost that status in the past several months. Where does SIH stand in that way, and are you working to move in a certain direction to stay in good stead?
Yeah, the rule as it's been passed is that you basically have to provide enough care that exceeds your property tax value. And then included in that care are losses on like the Medicaid programs and the cost of providing care for charity care patients, those who can't pay their bills. Our estimate of our property tax liability would be around a $4 million number for our entire system. And last year, between those two items I just mentioned, we provided over $40 million worth of benefit. So we're, you know, 10 times what the property tax liability would be. So, and it's part of our mission to take care of folks regardless of their ability, you know, to pay and to provide service to the Medicaid patients. So that's not a problem for us. And there's also a part of that rule is you have to provide free care in rural settings for up to 125% of the poverty level. Anybody meets that definition. And again, we've been exceeding that in historically in the past. I think that that's one area where the compromise and the approach they came up to makes sense. If you can't quantify the benefits you're providing, and if it doesn't exceed the tax benefit you receive by not having to pay those taxes, then you probably should have some responsibility for reimbursing the community. So I think they did a pretty good job of getting that one right. The rules haven't been written yet, and the Attorney General's office is going to play a big role in that. And so I guess there's a moment's pause wondering how that's all going to shake out. But I think they got that rule pretty well. They did that pretty well.
This was something that is not supposed to just fix the coming fiscal year. It's supposed to be kind of an overhaul that changes things down the road. Do you expect that that's going to be the case, or do you fear that you're going to have another year like this one where you have to really educate people on what these cuts mean?
Well, I hope in some of the conversations we had with the folks in Springfield, we're really oriented towards moving forward. And the concept I talk about of, you know, personal responsibility of primary care medicine versus emergency medicine, those types of things. I hope that people up there are listening. I know there are people in the department that would like to see that happen and are working towards more of a primary care type of model. But that's not going to, you're not going to change that overnight. I got the sense, unfortunately, in some of the conversations I had with various representatives, not the local our local folks, but people from other parts of the state when we were in Springfield, they were really just focused on dollars. And if they don't become more aware of the scope of the problems and the potential solutions, their choice will be to focus on dollars. You know, there were cuts made to adult dental, and I just really ask that they not do those sorts of things, because now those folks will end up in the emergency room in pain. You know, anybody's had a toothache knows how uncomfortable that is. They will get maybe some pain relief, but they won't get their problem solved. And so that's an example, I think, where they're making changes that in the long run, quite frankly, are going to cost a lot more money for the state. And, you know, it's kind of a shame because you're really not taking care of a primary need for that population of people. So hopefully they will become more focused on the creative solutions instead of the simple solutions of just simply cutting what gets paid.
Do you as an organization have to change the way some of your staff are trained as a result of you know, no dental care for adults on Medicaid? You know that they're going to be coming to your facilities. Do you have to have staff that are trained differently to deal with those sorts of issues?
That's a great question, because what's particularly frustrating with that issue is we had actually worked very hard with the local FQHCs to get those folks out of the emergency room. We had some frequent flyers that were in the emergency rooms a lot because they're in pain, and that pain can be excruciating, trying to get some relief. And we worked really hard to identify those patients, get them placed in a dentist service so they can get their root cause of the problem, no pun intended, but get their problem treated. And very fearful now that's all going to get undone and get reversed. We're going to have conversations with the FQHCs about, you know, what level of service they can provide and how we can get this done, because it doesn't do us any good to have those folks coming into ED. We're not helping them, you know, except for treating symptoms and we're not taking care of their basic problem.
This is a part of an overall problem that you've been talking about in terms of the medical industry, with people not understanding how the system works, people not understanding how to best use it, both to their advantage and in a cost-efficient way. We're watching the Supreme Court may come out soon this summer and rule on parts of the national health care plan. Where do you stand? Is a lot of stuff still in limbo as a result of these changes or proposed changes, or do you move forward?
I think we're focused on the future. Regardless of what happens with specifically with the Health Care Reform Act, Medicare is headed towards a financial crisis. That is just a reality. We're getting older. We do a lot of spend a lot of money on the Medicare program, and economics are unescapable. You're seeing that all over Europe right now, with countries, literally entire countries, are on a financial brink. So what our focus is, I think ultimately, the solution is better primary care, better managing of care. And quite frankly, we got to start taking better care of ourselves. The concept of personal responsibility at some level has got to be brought back into play. The obesity rates in the United States, smoking rates, those types of things. If we were fitter as a country, we wouldn't have near the problems we've got. I saw a statistic the other day that 23% of the teenagers in the United States are either diabetic or pre-diabetic. That's an absolute staggering fact. And you've got to have commercials on TV for kids to go outside and play. Until the public gets a sense for that, or there are some association between how you conduct yourself and the benefits you receive, it's going to be a constant struggle. And unfortunately, I think, you know, the focus is going to be, well, we'll just pay less and less and less to the providers to take care of this issue. We've got to get more primary care oriented. We've got to get longer term oriented. We've got to start managing health and making people healthier, as opposed to managing sickness and treating sickness.
Just in the final few minutes that we have remaining, for people who use your services, who perhaps are on Medicaid, or maybe they know someone on Medicaid and help them with their medical decisions, what changes should they be expecting once the new fiscal year begins in July?
They probably won't see anything significantly different. Our hope is, and we're working with physicians in the area to really try to improve this primary care concept and get people in medical homes so they have a physician who helps manage their care, or, you know, a physician's assistant who helps manage their care. So it won't be a big change in terms of, we're not going to provide certain kinds of services anymore because of these changes. That goes against our mission, and we're really dedicated to trying to take care of everybody in the region that needs care, and not lose sight of that fact. It may mean that instead of having your X-ray at Memorial Hospital of Carbondale, you may have it, you know, over at St. Joseph's, or you may have it out at Center for Medical Arts. We may do some things like that in order to balance out some of these financial cuts. But in terms of denying care to people, that's just not how we operate.
Fair enough. Rex Budde, thanks very much.
My pleasure. Thank you.